wait a minute, 84 months? That's right. Get 0% financing for 84 months on any John Deere compact utility tractor. These workhorses are packed with plenty of power, versatility, and features like the iMatch hitch for quick implement hookup. And you can get one now and pay no interest for 84 months. Now that's an offer. Call or come in today. Offer ends April 30th, 2015. Subject to approved installment credit with John Deere Financial. Some restrictions apply. See dealer for details. Visit one of Harvest Equipment's four locations today or visit them online at harvequip.com.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Connick. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. It's Friday, and we're broadcasting live this morning from the State House in Montpelier. We got a great lineup of folks joining us on a huge week here at the State House. Coming up in our second hour this morning, we'll be chatting with Senator Joe Benning. He's the Senate Minority Leader. We're going to be focusing a bit this morning on what happened in the House, but also sort of spinning forward here on what the likely will happen when these pieces of legislation get over to the Senate. The Senate President John Campbell will join us coming up in hour number two as well, right after our White House report. And also Governor Shumlin joins us coming up at 9:15. Joining us right now is a familiar voice because you just heard him introduce the program.
Newsmakers, newsbreakers.
And your phone calls.
That's right.
Jim Condon is a state representative from Colchester, was my former radio compadre, and a lot going on in the House Ways and Means Committee, which, of course, is the committee which raises money and raises taxes. I was just reading this Morgan True piece in Vermont Digger, talking about how much taxes have been raised, something like $65 million so far.
It's been a little much this year. It's really a little too much, in my opinion. This is why one of the reasons I voted against the new taxes on the health care bill. I was on the losing side of that computation, but we'll see what happens in the Appropriations Committee. I believe it goes there first and then to the floor.
Right. You think this would even survive the vote on the floor? I mean, given how close the tax vote was last week, and that wasn't, you know, as controversial as this.
Yeah, I really don't know what's going to happen on the floor. I assume there'll probably be lots of amendments this way and that on it. I mean, a couple of problems with it is, you know, we have blown so much money on health care that it just pains me to spend more. It really does. And, you know, as you probably know, I'm not crazy about the way this bill proposes to raise parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. And then if it does pass the House, I'm not sure what will happen in the Senate with it either.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a long way to go.
So the you did need to raise some money, though, right? I mean, this is a huge budget gap year. I mean, what would have been, if it's not $65 million, I mean, what would have been a more reasonable way? Or is it the wrong taxes?
Well, you know, as far as the exemption goes, I supported that, as I did, I think, 3 years ago. We're kind of in a similar boat.
Where you can't deduct your state income taxes from the next year.
Right, and you're limited to 2.5 times your personal exemption, standard deduction.
Now, you're not concerned about that?
Well, I am concerned about it, no question. But we're faced with a tremendous budget gap. You know, how we got there with that budget gap is another story. And, you know, frankly, it's unfortunate. We should have been watching our nickels a little more closely in the past few years.
So how did the sugar tax come out of your committee? It seemed to kind of come out of nowhere.
Well, there have been some advocates pushing for that for, you know, some years now.
Let me rephrase that. I mean, the resolution of where you came up with this half a cent on an ounce, just seemed to kind of, you were in the middle of the water bill argument on the House floor, and you guys are in your committee, and just kind of seemed to come out of nowhere.
Well, to be honest, we'd been working pretty hard on the whole thing, and we're kind of at an impasse. The original proposal was for 2 cents per ounce on the sugary beverages, and what it turned into was a half a cent per ounce on all soft drinks, whether they're diet or non-diet. So, I mean, it became clear this is not actually about obesity. It's about raising money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, frankly, opening this new door of taxation on a specific product like this, tobacco notwithstanding, I'm sorry, we should not go down that road, because it's never going to go down. The tax would never go down if implemented.
Mm-hmm.
It's only going to go up.
Mm-hmm. Now, over on the Senate side, the Senate Finance Committee, the counterpart to your committee, Tim Ash seems to be focusing on a sort of a much larger question here, this whole idea. He wants to look at things like expanding the sales tax, including services, lowering the rate. That seems like a very large proposal. You're frowning.
It is, and I do frown in general. I don't think that's the way to go. You know, frankly, if we have to come up with more revenue, we should do it in a fair way. And that would involve income. But, you know, frankly, all the choices are terrible ones. No question about that. But to try to expand the services, where do you stop? What does it involve? You know, if you're going to tax lawyers, guess what? There are enough lawyers in this building already.
So
what do you propose that?
So you mean it's not like a soda tax where you're trying to drive down the number of
Well, maybe it'll have that effect. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So what's left for your committee? What's left for you? You've passed the health care piece, right?
Yeah.
You've dealt with the budget piece.
Yep.
You've dealt with the lake piece.
Mm-hmm.
What's left?
We've also dealt with the education piece. But what's left? There are a number of different bills still on the wall, various and sundry things. And I'm sure we'll try to give the members that have proposed these, a hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And find out what they're all about.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the major bills to get out, really, this year.
So do you have any sense of what the Senate Finance Committee is up to? Is there discussion between your two groups here about where things are going, or is it just two totally different parallel tracks?
Well, I know the respective chairman of the committees, Janet Ansel and Tim Ash. They stay in contact with one another. But what the game plan is, I don't know if there is one yet, and if so, what that would be.
Uh-huh. All right.
How's that for evasive?
That was evasive.
Thank you.
I mean, for a guy, he's usually not that evasive.
Well, it's just because I don't know.
So tell me, this year, is the dynamic any different here with the governor having a close election, with, a speaker here who may be flirting with that idea, too, and has it changed anything in here?
Not really. I mean, the governor is still the governor. And we all have to work it out at the end together. It was a few years ago where we had proposed the cap on deductions.
Right.
And also had proposed a pull-up on the income tax marginal rates, which would have actually benefited most Vermonters, not all, but most. And, the governor couldn't stomach that. And suddenly found the money to fill that budget gap that we're trying to address.
Right.
I'm not sure that's going to happen this year. I hope so. I hope history repeats itself in that regard. But
that does seem to be something different this year. I mean, I remember year after year I would sit here and talk about these huge budget gaps, and they would just magically get taken care of without a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And this year it does seem to be different.
Well, we used to be able to find these pots of one-time money. There's a little bit in the budget this year, like $22 million, I think.
Right.
But we used to be able to find a little bit more here and there under the couch cushions.
So of all the tax packages that you've passed, which one do you think has the least chance of making it through the other side?
That's a good question. Good morning, Governor.
How are you today?
Good. I would think probably the tax package that has the least chance is probably the sugary beverage tax. But I don't know. I'm not a head counter. It's hard for me to say. But I think there's going to be some opposition on the floor to that. And if it does pass the House, I think there might be some problems in the Senate.
Mm-hmm. Is there another way to, if the Senate comes up with another source, is there another source that might be better on that, that comes back in the House in that last 72 hours when everything happens here?
And we'll have to ask the governor about that and his fiscal people to see if there's some more coins under the couch cushions. Certainly hope so.
Okay. He's giving you the zero sign.
Yeah.
So. Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it. Yeah,
a question for the
governor this morning.
What are you doing for Easter vacation?
Hey, it's good to see you this morning. I'm taking my mom out for dinner. Yeah.
Where are you going?
We're going. Well, we're meeting part way. My brother's bringing her up, and we're going to someplace in Queechy, Vermont, and I can't remember the name of it. To tell you the truth.
All right.
My brother picked it. I'm just, I'm along for the ride. I got to pay the bill. He picks the restaurant.
When I go to Queechy, I just gorge myself. I love the food there.
All right. That's the best question you could come up with this morning.
I'm going to save the probing questions for you, Mark.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Representative Jim Condon, Democrat from Colchester. You can join us on the program as well at 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free, you can reach us at 877-291-8255. Let me take a moment of your time to remind you about one of our great sponsors on the program. Our friends at Green Mountain Access would love to hear from you today. You can reach them toll free at 1-888-321-0815. That's 1-888-321-0815. You can also find them on the web, and that would be at gmavt.net. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Governor Shumlin. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
How's
Good
it
Friday.
Going?
It's
yeah.
Great to be with you.
Yeah. Highlight of the week for you in the legislature was what?
The highlight of the week was the clean water bill that passed by an overwhelming majority. And, the fact that, as you know, I laid out in my inaugural address the importance of finally getting serious about cleaning up the lake. And when I was up there last summer seeing the blue-green algae, for anyone that hasn't, it isn't just the thought that this stuff is going to be awful to swim in or fish in. It stinks so badly that you literally, if you had a camp family for years next to some of the shallow areas of the lake, or you're trying to run a business there, good luck. You don't even want to sleep in the building because you got the windows open. I mean, it's really, this has gotten to the point where we just can't continue to turn our heads to what we're doing to clean water. So I'm really proud of what the House passed. I think it's a great bill, and I'm excited that the Senate's also enthusiastic about getting a bill to my desk.
Some of the advocates have described it as not good enough, mile wide and an inch deep is one of the comments that was made.
I'm actually encouraged by the vast majority of advocates who are not only on board of this bill but helping us write it. And it's a pretty diverse group, but we have hundreds of Vermonters who've had it with clean water, who are working together with us on this. The press likes to quote the one or two they can find who says, it isn't enough. But I can tell you that the majority of advocates are very much on board of the bill that's being passed to this building.
I think that's an over-characterization. There was a story in Vermont Digger this morning that quoted a pretty wide variety of environmental groups saying pretty much the same thing. It isn't just one person that we're all finding.
All I can tell you is that isn't my experience. I've met with a wide variety of advocates, including representatives of CLF, who helped us to advance this bill, and I'm encouraged by the progress we're making.
Do you think this is going to be good enough for the EPA?
Yes. I do not know the answer to that. What I do know is that I spoke with Administrator McCarthy yesterday on the telephone. She's doing a great job at EPA. She thanked me for pushing so hard for this bill. And I think that, if the bill continues to take on the real issues, fund it, frankly, that with a good plan to clean it up, that it currently, in its current form, my prediction is that the EPA will very much support the work that we're doing.
Another criticism that was made of it, though, is that it lacked urgency, that it's going to take so long to clean up. I know, you've said before, everybody else says it took a long time to get into this. It takes a long time to get out of it. But, wow, 20 years? I mean, really?
But the reality is that, with the phosphorus that we've already got in the lake, you can't legislate Mother Nature and you can't legislate science. And, you know, I think we all have to be careful not to overpromise what humankind can do, cleaning up a mess that we've been contributing to for years and years and years. And when I say to folks who'd say, hey, let's speed it up, my question is how? And if they've got good ideas about ways to speed it up, we're in. We'll figure out a way to try and make it work. But, you know, I met with one of my most ardent late critics recently on this subject. And, you know, James Ellers, who has been one of the folks that's saying we aren't moving fast enough. And I said, James, you know, what would we do differently? And he brought up some technologies that are experimental that haven't been proven yet to work. That we're interested in, but we've really got to direct our resources to the places that we know are going to get the biggest bang for our buck. And we've got to be careful not to be able to promise to Vermonters that new technologies that haven't been implemented yet or haven't been proven yet are somehow going to solve our problems more quickly than what current science and current practices are able to do.
Let's talk about the education bill that passed. Again, it's being described, you know, words like landmark, historic. Is it really going to make that big a difference?
I really think it will, for the simple reason that Vermonters have consensus over time, again, just like the lake. You're not going to pick up your property tax bill next year and go, wow, I'm so glad that bill passed. It's going to take several years, but the bottom line is that we've got a school spending problem. We literally have gone from 120,000 students down to 78,000, and we're continuing to drop. And I think the real missed opportunity for all of us has been we have not had an adequate partnership between Montpelier and local communities where we're working together, taking out the disincentives to logical choices. For example, the small school grants. Why are we rewarding our micro schools when we know they're hurting kids? Looking at questions like phantom students, why are we in some schools funding more kids in empty chairs than in seats and chairs when we know that in many of these micro schools we're limiting educational opportunity for those kids? And why haven't we gone out to local communities, as my Secretary of Education is doing now, and say, hey, you know, not only do your residents feel that your property taxes are high now, but look what happens in 5 years and look what happens in 10 years. Here's the data. Let's partner to figure out what the solution is for you. And sometimes we talk about this as if we just do nothing and leave things the way they are, we won't hurt kids and small schools won't close. And it's just not the case. What will happen is that they'll close without a plan, you know, because they'll get so few students that there won't be anything left to do. So really, I think what this bill, what I'm most excited about, is what I proposed in my budget address, which is let's get rid of the disincentives to smart choices. Let's give incentives for reducing spending, and then let's partner with local communities to make it happen. Not one size fits all, because that's not going to work in my view, but really working with communities to figure out what makes sense to solve this problem for their communities.
Is it fair to say that there's a similarity between these two bills that we've talked about, that the significance of them is really that they're kind of turning this big ship around, and that not anything today is going to happen, but it's really more of that sea change. Is that fair?
It is fair, and I think that's why this legislative session is so difficult for me and so difficult for the legislature. You know, this isn't a lot of fun. We're cutting $112 million from a budget challenge that's got to be fixed. You know, not fun stuff. Very tough choices. We're taking on an endemic problem that we've had for years and years of just, you know, highest per pupil spending in a nation. Student count that's dwindling, and an infrastructure that we haven't changed much in the last couple hundred years. So tough stuff, unpopular stuff. With the lake, people don't want to go up there in July and August, the shallow areas of the lake, see blue-green algae. Yeah, I hate to say it, but they're going to. And yet, you know, we're making the tough choices, asking Vermonters to pay for a cleaner lake when they're not going to see it next year or probably the summer after. You know, this is going to take some time. And frankly, healthcare. You know, huge frustrations there because we're trying to solve intractable problems that can be solved, but it takes a lot of tough choices, courage. It won't happen overnight. And, you know, my own view is, Mark, that on the healthcare piece, if we continue to pretend that we can underfund our providers, that we can say to lower-income Vermonters who finally have Medicaid cards, finally have insurance, because we've cut our insurance rate in half, mostly by signing them up for Affordable Care Act through Medicaid, and, you know, that our somehow our primary care providers are going to be able to survive getting paid 40, 60 cents on a dollar, that low-income Vermonters who finally get the card, call up, can't find a provider because if you take too many, you're bankrupt, and that businesses are going to continue to see 10, 12, 14, state of Vermont says 18% increase in premiums this year, you know, that is not sustainable. And so these are all very tough problems.
Yeah, we put these on 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Let's go to Barry. Steve, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen, and Governor, thank you for your continuing service. These are difficult times.
Thanks,
Steve.
The
half-cent announced beverage tax that's come out of Ways and Means was originally supposed to be a disincentive for the consumption of sugar-based beverages. However, wholesalers testified before the committee that they will spread the tax over an entire range of their products. So, in effect now, we have a proposed hidden sales tax increase, and this concerns me. I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Thank you for your call. Thanks for calling. It concerns me, too. As you know, I don't support it. I feel that there's really a number of reasons why I think it's a bad idea. The first is I've always supported progressive taxation. I think the people who make the most should pay the most. That's what we do in Vermont. We joined three other states in having the most progressive income tax in the country. And one of the best-kept secrets in Vermont, I will say, is that actually our hardworking middle-class Vermonters and low-income Vermonters actually pay lower income taxes than all the states that have income taxes around us, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, New York, Maine. So, we've done a good job of setting up a progressive tax system. What the sugar-sweetened beverage tax will do is ask those who have the least to pay the most. Secondly, it's very, very tough on anyone that's competing along the eastern side of the state, and that's where I was born and raised. And third, I don't think that what it's funding now in the health care bill that's been passed solves the problems that we were trying to solve. The problem we were trying to solve was the Medicaid cost shift. Now, I know that's a boring term, and a lot of folks don't think about this much, but Democrats, Republicans, independents, progressives, if you ask them, they all say, we got to solve the cost shift. You know, this is critically important. Well, it is critically important. I would say that in terms of affordability, which is the big challenge, you know, making Vermont's economy work for every single Vermonter, healthcare premiums rising at the rate that they are is what's holding back our incomes and holding back our spending power. It's probably, along with school spending, the two main drivers of our frustration with this economic recovery, because we don't have the money in our pockets that we should, because these rise faster than we can make the money. So my view is, you know, let's go back to what we were trying to do, a dedicated funding source to draw down federal dollars to help us solve this problem where our primary care doctors, the folks that we love that take care of us in rural areas in particular, aren't getting paid enough to stay in business, where Medicaid patients suddenly get their insurance card, have trouble finding someone to serve them, and finally where businesses keep seeing increases in health insurance premiums go up at a rate that doesn't allow them to give raises, invest in infrastructure and future growth, and is holding back economic development.
You couldn't swallow a half cent on an ounce on the soda. Now they've included diet soda, which you 3 or 4 weeks ago condemned. Includes cigarettes and a bunch of others. That package doesn't, you can't swallow that.
I don't think it makes any sense.
At all.
At all.
All right, let's talk about a couple of the other proposals here. The arts community, there was an interesting piece that Alex Aldridge, who's in the arts community, put together talking about some of the agencies. It's about $3 million, he says, when you look at things like Vermont Public Television, the Arts Council, there are three or four others in there. You know, and he said for $3 million, you're really devastating a lot of these arts organizations and really not saving all that much money.
The problem we have is that getting to 112 is hard work. And when you find $2 or $3 million, you know, that gets you that much closer to 112. And listen, this is a math game we're playing now. I mean, let's just do simple math. Both under Republican and Democratic governors, doesn't matter who you hire. You look at the last decade, we've seen 4 or 5% growth rates in our spending. And you can go back a decade, and you know, if you look at Governor Douglas's early years, same spending trend, with the exception of the 2 years where the economy absolutely tanked and revenues tanked. We now all agree that, you know, we're going to see, and by the way, revenues have grown tremendously since I've been governor. I mean, we're up over $200 million, and, you know, the April numbers, you know, again, are looking a little better in some areas. So, you know, this is all good news. But here's the point. You can't spend at 5 and have growth rates around 3, 3.5 and expect that to work mathematically. So we've got to actually make the cuts. And when I say cuts, I shouldn't use that term. We should actually, what I'm really doing is we're bending the cost increase. So no one's going to get less money than they had, but we've got to match that growth rate, or basically, you know, just like family budgets got to do the same thing, with the money coming through the door.
Well, that's not true with everybody, though. I talked to the folks at the State Library Association. They say it's really a pure cut. It's an actual reduction.
Well, don't forget that I proposed $15 million worth of efficiencies, and that was one of them. So that's a different kettle of fish, and you're right about that. If you're one of the PSAPs or one of the other $15 million worth of tough choice, you know, I constantly hear Vermonters say to me, Mark, from all political parties, why can't government do things more efficiently? Why can't you always come back and ask us to pay more taxes? And I felt like I had an obligation to do what I got hired to do, which is figure out a way to run this ship more efficiently. So if you're talking about the 15.5 million worth of efficiencies I put forward, of which that's one of them, mm-hmm. Yes, those are cuts.
Let's talk about House Ways and Means has come out with this proposal that includes capping deductions. This would include capping deductions, health care, charitable, mortgage, and I'm missing one big one here. So I know you're concerned about this.
Really those three. So let's go back to the beginning. When I proposed my $112 million budget challenge, I was actually then 98.
Right.
I proposed some revenue, and I proposed getting rid of the income tax deduction where you can deduct last year's state taxes from this year's tax bill.
Yeah.
That was $15 million worth of new revenue. I did that because that plays no altruistic purpose. I mean, tax policy is supposed to raise revenue, but it's also supposed to drive positive behavior for the economy and for Vermonters, make their lives better. And, you know, what good does that do? It's not like it's going to help you buy a house or pay your health care bills or support charities that keep this state so great. When you remove the mortgage deduction, when you remove the charitable deduction, and when you remove the deduction on health care bills, you're hurting middle-class Vermonters, and you're hurting particularly seniors. Why? Because right now, this is only for folks who itemize, obviously, the 30% of the folks who itemize are seniors. 70% of big medical deductions, because you have a big medical cost that year, come from seniors. So you're taking that away from folks who don't have the capacity in many cases to work an extra 20 hours or 30 hours because they don't have a job anymore. They've retired. Second, on charitable giving, seniors right now give about 42% of the money to charity in Vermont. And they're only 30% of the itemizers, 42% of the dollars to charity. And guess what? You're taking that away from them. So, you know, there's this rhetoric in this building, and frankly, you know, we've been hearing this for a while. We can solve all our problems if we just tax rich people. Our problem in Vermont is that, literally, I said to the tax commissioner recently, you know, and I've said this to you before, I mean, go back and look at how many people made $500,000, rich people, more than once in this state in the last decade. And the answer is 174 people. You know, so when we talk about taking away these deductions, we're taking them away from middle-class Vermonters who want to buy a home, who have catastrophic health care costs that they're struggling to pay, or who want to support the charities, $100, $200, $300 donations to the organizations that keep this state vibrant. I just think that's not a good, smart public policy choice.
One of the other strategies, another total direction, the Senate Finance Committee is looking at this whole idea of raising money really a pretty, what would be, I think, a pretty significant change to the tax system. Sales tax expanded to services, presumably lower the rate. This is all part of this Blue Ribbon Commission.
So let's go to the Blue Ribbon Commission, because, I mean, for example, I was with one of the members of the Blue Ribbon Commission yesterday, Bill Schubart. What Bill said to me is, you know, we didn't put out a menu of ways to raise revenue. The Blue Ribbon Commission's report came up with a comprehensive package that would have lowered rates and, in their view, made Vermont's tax system more fair. I'm all for that conversation, but that's not what this legislature's doing. They're cherry-picking the Blue Ribbon Commission report to raise revenue, and they're not lowering anyone's rates.
So if, though, they expanded it to services and lowered the rate, would that...
Well, that's a tricky business, and I'm all ears, but it's a lot harder to deliver a smart tax policy than it is to talk about one.
Okay, let me take a call or two here. John, I'd need your help here. We've got... Let's take Tom's call. Tom, good morning. How are you today?
Yeah, morning, Mark, Governor. I had a quick question and kind of a thing. I know you've got a group of people in the tax department area there that are pretty much tasked with trying to find as much money that's out there or as possible. And so I got a couple things here. I know my question is, how far is too far? I know Mark was talking yesterday about a flower guy up in Colchester, and they're trying to get him for $32,000 because he used his own dirt.
Right.
And in my case, I made a mistake on my unemployment. I'm on unemployment now, and I underreported on working a part-time job. So they said I had a four-week penalty. No big deal. I did it. I'm not going to contest it. And they said I had to pay back, I think it was like $430 or $440. So my question is, I served the four-week penalty. They took the money out of each of those checks, and now when I get my fifth check, where I think I'm going to at least get something again, they are now taking the money out, saying to satisfy a judgment against me. So it's kind of like they're double. Instead of the $460, which they've already ticked, I think ended up taking more than that on those 4 weeks. Now they're taking it again to cover the $460, so it's kind of like I end up paying almost $900.
All right, I'm going to interrupt you. Thanks for your call. I'm going to interrupt you. Actually, I'm going to take this question and broaden it out a little bit, because there has been this discussion in the tax department 4 or 5 years ago in an effort to try to find money, close another budget gap. There were a lot more tax auditors hired, been pretty aggressive on auctioneers. Then they were going after people selling farm equipment. The story yesterday about the guy selling flowers, where you pay a sales tax if you and I buy a plant, but now they want to hit the guy for the soil. Here's my question. Is the tax department being too aggressive?
Well, you know, I don't think any of us would want to have the job the tax department does, because let's look at what's really happened here. The legislature, looking for money, passed statutes saying, tighten up, get more auditors, go get more money. You're not doing a good job of collecting the money. So then they go collect the money, and we find some examples probably maybe where we're being a little overzealous. Let's be honest about this. But, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. So they're in a tough spot. And so I'm always a little critical, a little careful to criticize the tax department, because the legislature and I have said to the tax department, hey, you know, can you get the computers working and get this thing running more like a business and go get the money that we're owed? They did it. Now we find examples where, you know, maybe they've overstepped or they've done their job a little too well, and we say, wow, you know, let's all jump down a tax department's throat and tell them, get rid of those auditors, stop collecting the money. You can't have it both ways.
Do you think they've been completely fair?
I think they have an awfully tough job that I wouldn't want. And, you know, let's go to the farm dealer example. When that whole thing blew up, I got on a phone with the folks that really felt aggrieved by this.
Uh-huh.
And the fact of the matter is, our policies were unclear. I mean, like, it wasn't the tax department's fault in many ways. It wasn't clear when you had a skidder, whether you paid the sales tax on a thing or not. I shouldn't get into the specifics. So the bottom line is, they've got a tough job. It's always easy to criticize. Listen, who do we all not like in life? We don't like the IRS. We don't like the tax department. I'm not going to pile on. I do think we should have smart tax policy that's implemented fairly, and that's what we're trying to achieve. And if there's examples where we're not, I want to hear about it.
Let me take one more call here. Fred, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, Mark. Good morning, Governor. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, how are you?
My question has to do with Vermont Interactive TV. The construction trades took a hell of a blow during the recession here.
Yeah.
And the average age of a construction worker is in the mid-50s, like myself. Vermont Interactive TV, they've closed a lot of the apprenticeship sites and stuff and have gone over to Vermont Interactive TV. Now it's my understanding that they want to close Vermont Interactive TV. What are you going to do for an encore? I mean, if we have an aging construction worker things, which are generally decent-paying jobs if there's work, with, you know, if you're going to take that away and stuff and make it, you know, that they're going to have to drive to one or two sites in the state, Rutland or Burlington from the Northeast Kingdom or Bennington, what... I don't think this is a prudent thing and stuff. The construction trades have taken hard enough of a hit, and so it's not that much money, I'm told, that's being saved. And please save Vermont Interactive TV.
Well, listen, I appreciate the call. You happen to be hitting one of the $15.5 million worth of efficiencies that I thought we could find because of technology, and I still think we can. And, you know, change is tough, and the biggest obstacle to change is fear. But with Skype and the many technologies that we all now have, you know, Vermont Interactive TV was set up back when that was really revolutionary technology, and you could look at a camera and a screen and talk to each other and interact through technology. And so we spent all kinds of money as a state building it out. Now, you know, you can pick up your iPad and Skype with someone anywhere in the world. And technology makes it possible, in my view, to save some real loot by asking us all to use the technology we have and keep the sites that are absolutely critical. But this is a place where I think Vermonters can save taxpayer money that we spend every single year when we have other technologies that do the job.
Thank you for your time, as
hey,
always.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Appreciate it. We're going to take a short break. Coming up next, we'll talk with Senator Dick Mazza. We'll be back right after these important announcements.
Imagine your car's engine running without good maintenance. Now think of your heart. The Medicine Shop Pharmacy helps you take care of life's engine. With our 100% focus on health, we're your one-stop shop for health products, as well as the health information and advice you and your family depend on. It's all part of the Medicine Shop promise to provide the products, information, and personal service that you need to care for your health and your family's health with confidence. No wonder so many health-conscious people take the Medicine Shop Pharmacy to heart. The Medicine Shop Pharmacy, 100% pure pharmacy. South Main Street, Barry.
Ruben and his team from RB Technologies on Route 14 in East Montpelier has been creating and supporting thoughtfully designed, custom-crafted computer networks for their clients since 1997. Here's Marsha Curtis from Capital Steel.
He's our IT specialist. We go to him for everything that we need for the computer systems, our security systems, our perception monitoring. If we've got a question about our email, a computer, Windows, any kind of situation that we run into, we run to Ruben. Oh, his customer service is great, along with being extremely professional. They're very personable. It's not like somebody sitting in here and talking a bunch of computer speak to you. They actually listen. They answer your questions in English, which is really good. And they don't look at you like you're absolutely crazy. You know, when you say, my computer is making this really strange picture or whatever it's doing. And they always seem to come up with a solution. It's really great. It works really well for us.
RB Technologies cares about their customers. Online at rbtechvt.com. RB Technologies, efficiency through technology.
Come to the Made in Vermont Marketplace, April 10th through the 12th. A weekend of fun featuring Vermont-made furniture, specialty foods, crafts, lighting, and more. Plus, raffles and giveaways. And of course, the Vermont Spirits Room featuring Vermont's finest distilleries, vineyards, and breweries. The Made in Vermont Marketplace, April 10th through the 12th at the Champlain Valley Expo. Presented by Vermont Business Magazine. For information and a $1 off coupon, go to madeinvermontmarketplace.com.
All right, we're back at the State House in Montpelier. Thank you for joining us on the program. You're free to join us. Sorry I couldn't get to all of your calls for the governor. 244-1777, our local number, toll-free, 877-291-8255. Joining us right now is Senator Richard Mazza. He is the chair of the Senate Transportation Committee, arguably one of the more influential people in the upper chamber. Good morning.
Good morning.
You going to dispute that?
No, I'm just one of the members of 30. That's all.
Okay.
Having a good time at it.
All right. Talk to me about some of these bills that have passed the House. I just want to get sort of a sense here. One of the comments that I've been hearing from leadership in the House is that they are not all that clear compared to past years about where the Senate is going on a lot of different things. There seems to be a larger division, a sort of a separate parallel tracks than more than in last year's. Would you agree
with
that?
Well, there's bigger issues this year. There's a lot more issues, and I think it always happens. We're always at this time of year. You have the House proposals, then you have the Senate. So I don't think it's any different than it has been, but there are bigger issues, naturally.
But isn't there usually, when it comes to something, I don't know, use the Lake Bill for an example. I was asking David Dean, chair of the Fish and Wildlife Committee, key player in this. I said, what's going to happen with this bill when it goes over to the Senate? And he really said that he was not clear what was going to happen.
Well, I don't think he knows what's going to happen. Certainly, they've been working on it all winter in the Senate, and they'll have their opinion, and it is a huge issue. And again, everybody's looking for funding, how you can get the most bang for your buck, and it's one of those issues that hit the front page this year. We hadn't talked about it to the extent we're talking about it this year, so they'll come together and at the end, but it's only April 1st mm-hmm. or April 2nd or 3rd. Here we are, and I think it's early enough that certainly there's going to be different viewpoints and different opinions, and like there always is.
What have you heard coming out of the House that really concerns you that you would have a great objection to?
Well, let's be honest about this. It's a tax package. One of the things that we're all concerned about, when I see yesterday that we're talking about $61 million, I think, in taxes or increases, or it is frightening. One of the things that Vermonters have said right along, that we're overtaxed, and if we're going to grow our business base, we've got to do it on a more friendly business basis, and it's very difficult to create jobs when the atmosphere out there says that we're going to raise more taxes, and whether it's payroll tax, whether it's beverage tax, whether it's increases or reduction, less deductions, those are concerns. And one of the things we don't want to do is discourage businesses from growing, because we're not going to tax our way out of this situation. We're going to have to do it through building the economy, and we're trying, and I hope we're successful.
So too many taxes.
Well, I mean, I'd like to see us, build something on a long-range basis. It's very difficult to come back here every year and say we're going to raise taxes $35, $40, $50 million. We've got to get more stabilized, whether that means, and it's not news that, we try to, our expenses are going 4 or 5%, and yet our income is 3%. I mean, that doesn't take much to figure that out. It's like, I run a small business, and one of the things I've learned a long time ago, that I can't take in $100 and spend $110. So we do it in businesses, and government has to try to live within their means.
Did government sow the seeds of their own destruction here?
Well, sure. I mean, let's face it. When we have a few extra dollars, we're very generous, and that's fine. We create programs. These programs expand. And are they good? Sure. Everyone benefits from a certain program. We're known to be very generous on a lot of our human services programs, and can we afford it? That's the other thing. I mean, there's things I'd like to buy some new equipment in my store this year, but we're not going to do it because the economy isn't that great.
Maybe put these on here. Let's take a call from Northfield. Graham, how are you this morning?
Fine, thank you. One thing I've been hearing about in Montpelier while they're trying to raise money is the confiscation bill, which has turned into an absolute nightmare in other parts of the country. And I would like to sort of urge everybody to call their representatives and tell them not to vote for that.
Okay, you got to help me. What are you talking about?
It's a police shakedown, essentially. They can accuse somebody of something, say, we'll let you off if you give us your cash or whatever, confiscate their car.
Right,
No judicial review, essentially, no. They don't have to be charged with anything.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard about this happening in other parts of the country. Did this happen to you?
It was proposed by Vermont. I think even the feds now have cut way back on what they're allowing.
Right.
Because there were some real abuses.
Right. Okay. Did this happen to you by any chance?
No. No, it has nothing to do with me. I saw that, you know, in VT Digger, and it's like, this is a really bad idea for Vermont.
Okay, because I just hadn't heard of any egregious cases in Vermont. So
no, I don't think there's been any egregious cases in Vermont because I don't think it's legal yet.
Right, okay. All right, thank you for your call.
Okay.
Thank you. Senator, anything you want to say to that?
No, I haven't seen the bill, whether it's a House bill or a Senate bill. Certainly there's... Every committee has a lot of bills pending on the wall, and we have not heard about them. If we don't serve in the Judiciary Committee, I suspect that's where it is.
Let's go to Royalton. Harry, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Yes, I hear there's a bill kicking around up there that would make it so that your body was automatically donated unless you went through some paperwork to refuse them the rights to harvest your organs.
Right.
I think
okay.
My body's mine.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah, we actually talked about this bill quite a bit early on in the session. I don't think it's really gone anywhere.
It has very few legs. I don't think it's going to go anywhere. It's,
okay, Harry, hold on a second. Let him finish his answer. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're correct. This bill, I don't think, is going anywhere. I don't think there'll be a hearing on it. It's something that you're exactly right. Your body is for you to decide how you want to dispose of it, and we have a system now in place that does that. If you want to donate organs, that's the way it should be. Thank you.
All right, thanks for your call, Harry. All right, 244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. Gas tax? You going to increase the gas tax?
No, not this year. We're not going to. That's not even for consideration. You know, the transportation fund is in pretty good shape this year.
Wow, that's remarkable.
Yeah,
very few years you've been able to say that.
Well, you know, we've made progress, and we haven't got a new federal law, federal bill yet, so we don't know exactly what the future is going to bring. But this year, there's some minor adjustments we have to make. Paving, bridges, everything will be up pretty much to par. So this is not the time for gas tax, and we don't know. The issue is, I think, gasoline is down right now. Let's give it a year and see where it goes, whether it goes back up or stays down. To jump on the bandwagon right now, I think, is too early.
Is there going to be, in the next few years, is there going to be a complete or sort of rewrite of how you do gas taxes?
You're correct. That's something that's talked about nationwide. We can't continue on the gas tax. As we all know, a couple of things are happening. One, cars are getting better gas mileage, which is good news. And so people are consuming less gasoline. Number two, we have more electric vehicles on the market, more hybrids, more natural gas. And some of our trucks now are burning natural gas or compressed natural gas. So with all that, there's no way you're going to generate enough revenue out of the gas tax or a portion to fund some of our projects. So the discussion out there is, where do we go next? Do we go in a mileage tax? Do you go and tax electric vehicles more? Or it is a big discussion. It's happening all over the country. But I know that the future will not be the gas tax.
Mm-hmm. So how long do you think that's going to take? And you're going to probably have to phase, or do you
You'll
think you have to
it,
phase
right.
it?
Yeah. It's not going to happen overnight. To enact any other sort of source of revenue is very difficult. It's gas tax is very easy, naturally. How many gallons you sell, you tax per gallon.
Right.
And it works. And I don't, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. But I look at the trucking industry, for example, and I've done some studies on that in the last year or two. And nationwide, companies are buying natural gas, compressed natural gas. UPS, I think, just recently bought 1,500 of them. Trucking companies from coast to coast, there's going to be filling stations, about 1,500 are going to be built this year. So the trend is moving slowly from diesel to natural gas. So when that's happening, you know, it's good for the environment, cleaner air. On the other hand, you don't buy diesel, that's what's taxed. Now, how do you tax the compressed natural gas?
Mm-hmm.
That's the issue. Some states are doing it on a sales tax. Now, if it goes on a sales tax, primarily, it goes in a general fund. So in Vermont, Casella has a few vehicles, and it's growing every day. More and more vehicles are growing on the other sources of energy. So, and I suspect in a few years to come, there'll be some even electric vehicle trucks out there. So mm-hmm. We got to figure out that whole package where it used to be pretty easy. Just tax diesel fuel, tax gasoline. That was your revenue.
toll booth at the Canadian and Massachusetts border. You like that idea?
No, I don't like that idea at all. I don't think we can do it anyway under the federal law, but Vermont has too many exits, very short space apart, and why discourage tourism by charging a toll?
Back roads.
Back roads, right.
Do you think this education bill that the House passed will have any meaningful, will make any meaningful difference?
Well, that's got a long ways to go, and I haven't really seen or gone over the final draft what the House did. But you know what they did.
You know, well, what, I mean, they're going to make larger districts.
Well, listen, I think as far as consolidating districts, there's nothing wrong with that, but you can't, it's not a cookie cutter for everyone. Vermont is kind of unique, and some areas can do that, and some areas can't. So there's a lot of discussions going to happen on that. I suspect the Senate will have their version, and again, it's a very complicated issue. You can't talk to two different folks that have different opinions about it, and it has been a complicated issue for years. But you know, one of the things you continue to try to work on is the spending side, and that's something that everyone should be working on. Consolidation is one thing, but spending, you can't spend more money for fewer students. That's pretty obvious. Now, how do you get there? You know, any other business, if you cut down on your volume of business, you cut down on employees, and so far I haven't seen that happen in education.
Mm-hmm. Are they comparable?
Sure. Yeah, I think they're comparable. Yeah, I think they're I hear the ratio of students per class is, if you change it by one or two, it makes a big difference. Well, you know, how do you get there? That's the point. School districts are, you know, every town values their schools. They value their small schools. They value their districts, and it's tough to convince them. The only way it's going to convince them is through showing the finances. And I mean, people are going to continue to vote down budgets. And that's, you know, in some cases, they're doing their very best, I understand, to keep costs under control. Other areas, it's very high. So it's a very complicated issue, and it's no easy answers.
Nancy, you're on the air with Senator Richard Mazza.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I just have a quick question, and I'm not sure if you covered it or not, but my understanding that there was a bill regulating drones in Vermont. And I just wondered if there is where that stands, and maybe you could talk a little about it if it is. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure it is either.
I read the other night that the FAA has approved some version of drones delivering for
Amazon. Yeah.
I still don't know how that's going to work, whether a package drops out of the sky into your front yard or.
Well, they're testing up over the Canadian border here. There's this airspace above 200 and below 500 that's apparently unregulated.
Really? Yeah. I don't know how that works. It's pretty amazing to me that they can do this, but I think it's going to be a few years away. And so I don't think it's on the front burner in the legislature this year.
Should you regulate it now before it becomes a problem, though? I mean, do you want to have stuff, drones flying around?
Well, I don't know how you're going to have drones. Hundreds of them in the air at the same time, and not—I don't know how you control them. I mean, that's a FAA situation where they have to control, because I can see it now: small planes coming in and drones there, and I don't know. It's a big issue, but it's beyond what I can imagine right now.
Your store in Colchester is right on Mallets Bay, right on Lake Champlain. Not really an area. I mean, you've sort of got your own kind of pollution problem there with the concentrated waters, but not really a blue-green algae issue. What are you hearing from the people that come in your store about this lake issue?
Well, you know, we're very fortunate in the Mallets Bay area. It's a very clean part of the lake. I represent 27 miles in Colchester and over 120, about 130 miles of lakeshore total. I go all the way through the island, so. It's so much different as you go.
That's
up
right.
The
you
islands.
Represent the islands,
right?
Too.
So
yes.
It's so much different as you go up the islands versus Mallets Bay. Mallets Bay, really, it's just it's very clean, and the whole 27 miles, I would say, is pretty good shape. But as you work up through the islands and go towards North Hero and Islamont, and then there's the problems there. So it's like two different situations, but. It is a serious issue up in the islands, which is, again, you know, in the summertime, there's tremendous amount of tourism. Canadians in our area, for example, I bet you 40-50% of my business is just from the Canadian business coming down because all the boat traffic.
Yep.
And
wow.
So it's something that they look at, and they go to New York, and the competition is right across the lake. So they're not going to come into an area where there's blue algae and sitting in muck. So they look at that. I've talked to many people who, if they're going to come in, they want clean water because when they dock their boat, they want to swim in it. They want to, you know, enjoy the lake. So it is an issue.
Do you think this bill's going to do anything?
Well, you know, it's a start. You know, we haven't seen a lot of progress in the past, and we've spent a lot of money in the past. We've spent hundreds of million dollars in the past, and I haven't seen a lot of progress, but I think it's more serious. I think the governor has said, you know, for example, small farmers have to get on board to help out. I think they have to participate. It's not just a farmer's issue. It's everyone, but unless you get serious about it and put some laws and restrictions in, it's never going to get better, and we can't afford to get any worse.
Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you. Appreciate
Senator
it.
Dick Mazza is the chair of the Senate Transportation Committee, and he's joining us here live at the State House. A moment of your time for our friends at Jet Service Envelope. If you're looking for an outstanding local printer, make it our friends at the Jet. You can call them at 229-9335. That's 229-9335. Their web address, yes, you can find them at jetservice-envelope.com. They are a division of Waitsfield and Champlain Valley Telecom. News is next.
AP Radio News. I'm Rita Foley. New jobs.